Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene podcast with me, Dave Hendon. Now, this week I caught up with Mark King. We had a chat in Belfast, of course, the scene last year of his great triumph in the Northern Ireland Open. Mark's been a professional since 1991. He's one of the circuit's great characters. I really enjoyed my chat with him, and I hope you do too. Mark, let's start by talking about how you got into snooker. What was your introduction to the sport?
Well, my older brother, Andrew, is a carpet fitter. And the Romford Luciana, where obviously Steve Davis started out, my brother used to go up there every day. And obviously, being his younger brother, I was 6 years younger. I think I was about nine and a half at the time. And he was always coming in from work, going out. Where are you going? I'm going to the snooker club. And it just basically happened from there. I went up there with him one day and played a game of snooker. And still to this day, I can still remember the first ball I ever potted. And it was really weird because the white was like in the jaws of the green pocket, the red was like on the blue spot, and I literally potted the red in the black hole and followed the white in. I remember that being one of my very first, and for some reason it just stuck in my mind.
And
ever since that day I sort of just fell in love with snooker, and obviously the Luciana in Romford was like a magical club, just full of characters, full of gangsters, pikies, and just people, wheelers and dealers, fights going on, and people putting their fists through the fruit machines.
Proper stuff.
Listen, you could write a book on that club, just the people that used to go in there, but it was fantastic. It was all like everyone knew everyone, and it was fantastic. And once I sort of went in there, I loved it, and it was smoke fueled and, you know, pasties and sausage rolls is all they had to eat, and it was brilliant, really. And that's where I started. Loved it, absolutely loved it.
And we're talking, you know, I guess it's early 80s, so it's the time where snooker's now booming on TV.
Yeah.
So in terms of your development, and particularly in Essex, which is such a strong area, you had a lot of competitions and a lot of chance to sort of progress.
Yeah, I mean, obviously when I started playing was in 84. Davis was obviously still at the top. And he came into the Luciana a couple of times, and I sort of managed to watch. Obviously didn't play him at that stage because he was only very young, just started playing. But the snooker in them days was, you know, unbelievable. Jimmy obviously was up there with Higgins and that sort of stuff. I can't even remember. What was the question again?
I was just saying about how you the sort of thriving scene meant that you had a lot of competitions to play.
I can remember sort of most weekends I'd watch obviously the finals on the TV with my dad, and most of the time it was Higgins and Davis. And I used to love Higgins, I used to love watching him play, and I always wanted Higgins to win, but obviously Davis was the business and he was world number one, and most of the time he got the better of Alex. But great memories of seeing Jimmy on the TV. And I can remember coming in one evening, and I think Silvino Francisco was in the final one, if I remember
British
right.
British Open, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, and I can remember coming and going, Dad, who's that? And he was like, oh, Silver. Oh, never seen him before. it was brilliant in them days. The snooker was, you know, always on the TV. You know, they were proper celebrities then.
Yeah, yeah.
And when did you sort of realise you were good at the game? Because a lot of kids played in that time, but didn't really get any better.
Well, to be honest with you, I started in 84, and another player at the time who played at the same club was David Grimwood. And as a junior, I think he was the British under-16 champion. And I started playing him a little bit. He gave me 80 start to start with and wiped the floor with me. And it happened within sort of a year and a bit, I was playing him levels. But the reason why I progressed so quickly was because I spent every waking hour in that club. Mm. And even though I didn't really have any money, I used to just sponge games. You'd have the same, I don't know, 10 people who used to come in the club over 7 days and play on their own. And I got to know these people. So then when he came in, I said, oh, do you want a game? And I basically used to sponge games all day. And obviously my mum and dad used to give me a couple of quid for the day. Literally, I was paying people all day, every day. And when the lights were off, I was still sort of playing on the tables, even though you weren't allowed. I was still playing with the lights off. And that's how I really progressed. And I think when I got to about... I got to a quarter-finals of an under-16s tournament in Hastings. And Rod Lawler beat me. I think it was a semi-final. Rod Lawler beat me in the semi-finals, and that was the first time my dad said, oh, do you know what? You're actually pretty good at this. Yeah. We was always going to, like, Prestatyn, Breen Sands, Hemsby. They had, like, five or six tournaments throughout the year, which was the pro circuit then, where they got their pro ticket. And obviously the under-16s, under-14 tournaments and that sort of stuff. And in 1986, I won the UK under-14 for the first time. And I won that 3 years on the trot, 86, 87 and 88. And really, from then on, I just always knew I was going to be a professional, however it was going to be.
Yeah.
And that's how it really started. And, and I've always loved playing.
Yeah.
Still love playing now.
Yeah, and you were one of the game went open... In 91, you were one of the first pro. One of the first pros to join the pro ranks. What was that like? Because there were hundreds of people, weren't there?
Yeah, well, you had like Bolton.
Yeah,
you had Bolton, Sheffield, and I think it was Aldershot. And I can remember spending my first. I think it was a month at Bolton, and after my first year, I think there was 9 tournaments. I qualified for the last 64 of 2 out of the 9, and after the first season, I finished 209. In that ranking. But yeah, I mean, it was you could pay to be a professional, and that's how I obviously turned pro. But you know, it's just pretty much like the same as it is now, with going to all the tournaments. All the pros were at one, you know, playing in one club and that sort of stuff.
But the difference now is, like, you could, if you're on the tour now, you could play Ronnie O'Sullivan first round. Back then, you didn't see the top players in all the
shot,
that's
those right,
places.
That's right, yeah.
So did you feel like a pro, or, you know?
I don't know, really. Yeah. I can't really remember. I can remember just thinking, you know, I've turned pro, this is what I'm going to do. And you're right. And I remember I won however many matches to get to the last, whatever it was. I played 2 or 3 rounds in each one, qualified for 2. And even then, I had to win... one more match at Stoke-on-Trent to play a seeded player in the last 6-4, I think. The first one I was supposed to play was Peter Francisco, but I lost the round before to Stephen Murphy at Stoke-on-Trent. So there was a couple of them, but yeah, you was nowhere near the top players, and you had to win, you know, 7 or 8 rounds to get to people like Hendry and Davis in them days, you know what I mean? I think it was better though, because no disrespect to the lower ranked pros, but I really think that if the lower ranked pros started in round one, and then you had it like the staggered tiered system, 16 was at a venue, 17 to 32 were round behind, blah blah blah. I really think that the first year pros would stand a better chance of doing better and improving, playing their own sort of standard to start with, and then going through to the bigger players.
Yeah.
I really do think it's better for them.
Yeah. Do you remember your first TV appearance and sort of song around that?
Yeah, first TV appearance was The Crucible.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah, so you would do, yeah.
Yeah, 1994, yeah. Darren Morgan, 4-1 up, lost 10-5. But I can remember the cameraman, obviously at the time he was zooming in, and I was going, what are you doing? but obviously that was how they did it. Keep still, we are. You know what I mean? Moaning at the cameraman. But obviously at that time, it was my first time on TV. Didn't really know what was happening. But had a fantastic time. And I can remember Jimmy coming up to me. And I'd never met Jimmy before. And he was so welcoming.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? He's the same now. He's different class. And he remember him saying to me, you know, go and enjoy it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And made you feel really comfortable. And Parrot was another one when I was growing up. But when we used to go to Prestatyn and places like that, myself and Ronnie, he never really stood away from the youngsters. Mm. He was always sitting in the bar with his wife and his little ones. And, you know, just really very open to everyone, speaking to him, and not really, you know, not saying he was up his own. Mm. He was a nice fellow, and he was really down to earth and made you feel welcome. And another player that was nice, with Parrot and Jimmy.
Yeah. So you got to the Crucible. Did you feel then, because that's a big step playing there, it's like the Holy Grail, isn't it? Did you think then actually this is a major step forward? Although you didn't win the match, you'd played there, it was something to build on.
No, I don't think I did. Mm. I just think I played there and, you know, I enjoyed it and sort of like rabbits in the headlights, I suppose. But it was just on to the next one. It was on to the next year and try and improve my ranking and that sort of stuff. I think I went from 209 to the first season, mind you, 94 when I was a pro, 3 years then. I think I sort of gradually every year I moved up a few places, 70 places, then it was 10 places. But obviously, I think at that time there was 9 or 10 tournaments then. Mm. And then obviously the tournaments gradually sort of fizzled out and we ended up with 6, obviously. But now, obviously, it's brilliant now with 20 odd tournaments a year. No one can complain now. It's fantastic.
Mm. Around this time, you were practising with Steve, were you, Steve Davis?
I started practising with Steve, I think, oh my God, I think I was in my early 20s. I think it was when, can you remember the year when sort of Davis came to the end of his dominance and then Hendry sort of took over?
Yeah, so sort of early
90s. Yeah, early 90s. I started practising with Davis in the match room and honestly the knowledge and experience that he gave to me, you know, for nothing was priceless and still hold it, you know, close to my heart now sort of thing. Great. Great person, great player, and you know, he didn't need to play me. But I think because the game was moving on to sort of like more attacking, where I was sort of just a bit of a potter, I think he sort of needed that to, because how the game was going, he sort of needed. It doesn't say he needed me, but the way I played suited him to how he played, so he could sort of get more of a gist on the game going forward, that sort of stuff. But yeah, priceless practice. Games with him, you know, knowledge and safety battles, and we used to play best of 7, best of 9 for the lunch, and oh my God, it was like blood. It was literally like, and remember a couple of, I didn't win very often, but a couple of times I won like 5-4 on the pink. You know, I don't think he spoke to me all afternoon after that. But yeah, great times, absolutely fantastic times. And always remember his dad sitting in the corner of his big cigar and his bottle of Budweiser sitting there chilling out all day, bless him. Great times.
Okay, so I guess your first real step forward, you got to the final of the Welsh Open, 97 in Newport. You'd have been, what, 23? So that must have felt like a step forward.
Yeah. Yeah, massively. I think I remember I played Steve the first round at the Welsh and I beat him 5-4 in the black and I should have lost. And then I played Michael Judge after that, Tony Chappell, Fergal, and then I was 3-1, 3-4-1 down to Mark Williams in the semi, 6-5. And then I played Hendry in the final and it was just like a whipping. It was a complete and utter whipping and like...
But he was so used to finals, wasn't he? And it's your first one, so yeah, already he's an advantage.
I mean, to be honest with you, I could have played anyone else and I'd have had half a chance, but playing Stephen in my first final, you know, when he's at his number. I remember breaking off, I left him a long ready, made 140. Mm. Then the second frame, he broke off, I played safe, he knocked a long red 104. I just sat in my chair, and at the time you could smoke then. Yeah. Smoked about 10 fags, watching him just make break upon break and thought, do you know what, if I really want to be, you know, world number one or win events, you know, that's how far behind I was, you know. Fantastic player, you know, great player as well, great person.
But it obviously helped you get in the top 16, and then a couple of years later you made your Masters debut, which was pretty memorable. You beat Jimmy 6-5, Peter Ebdon 6-5 at the old Conference Centre, which was a pretty forbidding
best Masters venue by far. Yeah, obviously with it being sort of my local place and obviously Jimmy's as well, I had about 800 people come and obviously Jimmy had all the rest, whatever. But yeah, it was an unbelievable atmosphere. I can remember winning 6-5 on the pink And it felt like a final. And then I played Peter the next match, and that went on for about 3.5 weeks. I remember us getting pulled off at 5-4 that night to go back to my hotel, and end up winning 6-5, I think, on a re-spot. And I played Higgins and got me bum whipped 6-1 in the quarters. But yeah, the conference centre was, the people were so close to you, and you know, the atmosphere was a bit like the Crucible. It was so close, and you could hear a pin drop. And it's a shame, really, because it was a fantastic venue. Shame it ain't there anymore.
But that's what it's about as a pro, isn't it? Like the Crucible, the Conference Centre, because a lot of tournaments, you know, you can be playing maybe table 4 or 5, and people won't necessarily see you, but they're going to see you there. That's like centre stage.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the Crucible, the Masters, Conference Centre, them, they're just so close to you, and that's why people find it so hard to play it like the Crucible, because it's such a daunting place, and you can play. Personally, I think it's so hard to play well there, because there's so many things going on, and you got to be. And now they, you know, for 17 days they can. I don't know how they do it, because like when I played in here last year in Ireland, and it was for a week, I was literally zonked, and it was only a week, and that was only best of sevens. Yeah. You know, they're playing best of 19s, best of 25s, first to 17. Oh my God, I'd have to put a new head on. I'll have a week off. 17 days of that, you know, 100% fueled snooker is just unbelievable.
Let's go on to the Irish Masters then. That was your second ranking final, 2004. And you've beaten some great players to get to the final. You've beaten Fergal, Stephen Endre, Jimmy White, Graham Dock, Ken Doherty. And then you've come up against Ebden and running very close.
Yeah, I think that was probably the, even though it was my second final, that was one I thought, well, do you know what, I fancy I can win this, not, oh, I'm going to win this, whatever. Because Pete, you know, Pete, you got to drag Peter off the table. And ended up losing 10-7, I think. And I remember playing half decent, but I just missed a couple of vital balls at vital times. And obviously Peter beat me, and he came out with one of the worst statements ever after. He beat me 10-7. And he said, I've been practising so hard, that's why I've got all the luck. Like, basically, say, if I practice 15 hours a day, I'm going to get more luck than everyone else. Complete load of old crap, Pete. So, you know, it was a disappointment, but at the same time, it was another positive in the right direction. As you said, beat some really good players. I mean, to get to any final at any stage in any career is a good feat for anyone. It was just nice to reflect on. Obviously gutted I lost, but you know, it was just the way it went. Just one step too far at that time.
Well, we're going to move on now to one of the more unusual things that you've done, which was your fight with Quinton Hand.
Okay
now, just to, so everyone, everyone knows what happened. So Quinton's playing Andy Hicks at the Crucible. There's a bit of verbal between them. They have to be basically separated at the end. And Quinton basically says, I want to fight you for 50 grand. Andy does not want to fight him. No thanks. But then you come into the picture and you end up at your court, Bethnal Green, having a boxing match. How did all that happen?
Well, to be honest with you, it was all banter to start with, because the promoter at the time, George Barmby, he was obviously sponsoring Quinton. And obviously it was all in the paper, I want to fight Andy X, blah, blah, blah. And I can remember getting beat 10-9 by Graham Dott at the Crucible. And then they asked me about it, and it weren't like, oh, I just said, well, if he wants to give me 10 grand, I'll fight him. Like, just for a bit of banter, I weren't even serious. And then a couple of days later, George rung me up and went, well, do you want to fight him? And I went, what? Really? And he said, yeah. He said, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, cut a long story short, I went and met him. We had a deal, whatever, finances, how much I was going to get, blah, blah, blah. And then it just absolutely took off. I mean, it was in the sun the next day.
Pot whack, they called
it. Yeah, pot whack. And literally, 1,500 people sold out at your call. And even though I'm a shit boxer, and it was one of them nights that I'll never forget, because the atmosphere was electric.
We all thought you'd win, because you can handle yourself.
You know, listen, to be fair, people think I've never boxed in my life ever. And the worst thing about it was, he had 15 fights in Australia, kickboxing, Thai boxing. So obviously he knew what he was doing. We're like, I thought we was going to go in windmills and all that. But, you know, I remember coming out and walking out to him slowly. And I remember taking a jab. And as my jab got about, I don't know, half a foot from his face, I remember getting a jab to the nose. And I remember wiping my glove and seeing blood. And then the Hulk come out. I was like, and then within 2 minutes I was so tired and I literally cuddled him for the next 6 minutes. But no, listen, it was something that you know, I ain't proud of, if I'm honest, but it was one of them things where I watched boxers on the TV before that and went, oh, I'd do him. He's useless, he's the worst boxer I've ever seen. I fancy doing him. But until you actually do it and you go through it, you realise how much of a hard job boxing is, especially to control your temper and obviously to keep fit and all that. So to any boxers out there, I hold my hat off to you. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I remember sitting in the shower after for about an hour because I literally couldn't move.
Yeah.
I was so tired. But I'm glad I did it. I'm glad I did it.
Yeah. Well, we're recording this in Belfast and 12 months on, of course, from your victory last year, which was one of the... I mean, there's a lot of tournaments played, but that was one of the most memorable moments of last season. Not just because, obviously, you've been a pro for so long, but just the sort of your reaction afterwards, the speech you made. Obviously, all your family were there.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that now? I mean, how many times have you watched it back, first of all?
I actually only ever watched it back 100% every frame once.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched it once. But I've got a thing on my Sky Planner where it's the last bit, and it's actually you
that
says it straight away. 25 years in the making or whatever of waiting, and I've seen that hundreds and hundreds of times. Like if I feel a little bit lapsing confidence, and I think, oh, I'll either stick that on or when I played Ronnie in Germany, that sort of stuff. But yeah, no, listen, that them 2 minutes after I'd won and the family was just an accumulation of 25 years of just working hard and dreaming of that day. I never thought it was going to happen, and feeling so envious of other pros like Selby's and anyone else that had that couple of minutes where their family had come out. And obviously to do it was just, you know, the miracle that I had, and never ever forget it. And I want more of it. I do want more of it. So that's why, you know, I'm practicing harder than I've ever practiced before, working on new stuff, trying to sort of get my game together. Just need to play a bit more attacking, you know what I mean? Try and open the balls a bit more and just get on with it, rather than sometimes I can bog myself down a bit, but, you know, it's the way we play sometimes.
In the end, though, you did well to win the decider, because you could have won the previous frame. You had that epic battle with the pink and the black, and you won that battle, and then he's won the frame on the respot, so you've had to pick yourself up again and get on with the last frame. Was that difficult?
Well, it weren't, because I remember going to the toilet, and as I walked to the toilet, it was like, it looked like a stall, didn't it? Because it was in the tent.
Yeah.
And I can remember Sally was sitting by the players' lounge and Polly was doing cartwheels. And as she see me, she came over and she gave me a big hug. And I was thinking, you know, what am I worrying about? Yeah. Everything got put into perspective. When she came over, and I'll give her a hug and I'll give her a kiss and that. She went, how are you getting on? I went, oh, it's the last frame, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, you know what? Whatever happens, everyone here I love is here, my family, obviously apart from my dad, which was a sad thing, but everyone here that means anything is here, and whatever happens, I've done my best. And I went into the final frame and I was really positive, and I never felt any negative tools. I never twitched any shot. I missed a couple, they weren't because of twitching, it was just because I basically missed them. And I went and obviously in the end I played a pretty decent frame in the end, you know what I mean? And yeah, obviously to win it was amazing at the end.
And your speech as well, everyone remembers that. And I think what people related to, you know, some sports, golf, tennis, whatever, they'll thank their sponsors and it'll be very scripted, whereas you, it was totally from the heart.
Yeah, of course, one thing I don't ever forget, I don't ever forget the people that have helped me along the way. And there's plenty of people that have kicked me when I'm down. Yeah. But, you know, the people I mentioned, like Steve and Jeff at the club, have been there from the beginning and always support. He's still supporting me now brilliantly, obviously my dad, and my family, and they're the people that matter. And obviously the gambling side of stuff is so far in the past now, it's just horrible to think what a person I was in them days. And the worst thing was, probably at the height of my career, when I should have been doing better, was when I was gambling at my most, you know, the worst. So you know, probably it's not nice looking back in them respects, because I weren't a very nice person then. But now, you know, 5 years off, and you know, I don't even think about it now. It's not even in my vocabulary.
Yeah. Gambling, though, I mean, it's part of snooker. And like you say, in the club, in the old days, I'm sure there was sort of bets going on. And now a lot of tournaments are sponsored by betting firms. Yeah. So it's part of the game.
Yeah.
When did you sort of realise that it had become a problem? It had gone from having a few bets to actually, like, taking a grip of it?
I think it was probably, I first went to GA in 1997, 98, just before I got married. I knew I had a problem. I'd had one day, I'd spent about $3,000, I'd obviously lost it. That was the worst day I've had in financial terms. Just thought I need to go. So I went to GA for 7 months. And then thought, oh, I don't need this, these are all losers, blah, blah, blah. I was still quite young. And then I went back at it, gambling, you know, card schools, betting shops, that sort of stuff. And then in 2000, I think it was 2003, I'd been gambling still quite heavily. And I just thought, you know, I'm really pretty much playing snooker just to give to Ladbrokes or William Hills and that sort of stuff. So I decided it was time to do something about it. So I went home, I said, look, love, you know I'm gambling still, blah, blah. I need help, blah, blah, blah. And I've been going GA ever since. I've had, I think, 3 or 4 lapses in 14 years. But on the whole, I've done well. My lapses have been like a pound in a quiz machine. Bulgaria 5 years ago was the last bet I had. I was in a casino. I spent about £30. But the thing is, where GA is in my blood, it's been in my blood for so long now, I'll always go back. And if I ever do break out and have a bet again, it would just be a very small bet. And I just hope it never happens. And it's just nice to have the support at home from Sally. You know what I mean? She's always been a great rock on my shoulder. She's been fantastic.
Well, someone else has been fantastic is your dad Bill, who you mentioned. I mean, he's a character on the circuit in his own right, isn't he? Talk about like how important he's been to your career.
Oh, listen, from day dot, from when I used to play at Barking, and you know, when I was 12-13 years old, and literally you'd have an A4 bit of paper. Stephen Bourne, the owner at the club at the time, gave it to my dad, and that was the list of the tournaments for every weekend for the year. Saturday, Sunday, Lincolnshire, Manchester, Barking, Ilford, 128 players, £1,000 a winner. And all my dad did was drive me up and down, spend all his last money. Because listen, excuse me, my dad's was never a well-off person, but any money he ever had, he gave to me. He gave everything to me. And as I said, I can't thank him enough for the years and years of you know, financial, and obviously just being there for when, you know, he still comes up the club now 2 or 3 times with my brother, picks the balls out, loves it. And you know, it's just a shame he ain't here this week again, because he ain't got no passport or driving licence for the minute. So yeah, it's tough in that respect. But you know, I can't thank him enough. He's put every last penny into me. And obviously the only way I can repay him was obviously winning that trophy.
Yeah. And what was it like going back with the trophy?
It was tears. It was tears and cuddles when he came into the club. He's just elated. And even when we did the interview at the BBC with Hazel and Stephen and that, and obviously he couldn't say 2 words without crying, do you know what I mean? Bless him. And yeah, such a character.
Yeah.
Lovely, absolutely gem of a bloke, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You've been a pro now 26 years, it's a long time. Do you enjoy being a snooker player?
Love it,
yeah?
Absolutely love it. Because the thing I like it more than anything is I'm my own boss. No one's telling me when I've got to go and practice. I've got to do this, you do that. I know I practice harder than I've ever practiced now, because I know I've got to put the hours in, because I need to be hopefully one step ahead of everyone else. Because listen, the youngsters are playing 10, 12 hours a day, not even blinking. And I'm doing me 5 or 6 hours a day, trying to. And that's the only way you can move forward. As I said, I started again in 2015, because obviously all my alignment was wrong. I see Chris Henry. And I've literally, for the last 2.5 years, I've been working on that. So I'm still moving forward. I'm still learning. I'm still trying to get to, you know, perfection in that respect, doing my routines every day. And I love it. Listen, I don't enjoy the practice as much as I used to, but I love coming to the events. I love the banter, you know, all the other pros and that, going out for something to eat. And
What about the travelling, though? Because there's more of that now, isn't there?
Do you know what? I don't mind the travelling. I just wish the China events were a bit more few and far between in respect of, like, you know, we come back from Dashing.
Yeah.
Played in the Champions and went back to Shanghai.
You want them back-to-back, rather.
So I'd rather, like, you, Shan and Shanghai together, so you can go to that one. You're only 3 hours from that one. Two plane journeys rather than 4. That sort of stuff. But you know, we can't grumble. It's one of them things, we can't grumble, because you know, we're lucky where we are in now with the tournaments. We had 6 tournaments a few years ago. Barry came in, and ever since he's been fantastic, and you know, well done to him.
Do you ever think about the future? I mean, no one can play forever. Do you ever give that any thought?
Not really, because I I'm 43. I still think I'm 21. I still think and act like I'm one of the new ones on the tour and all that. And I'm age is just a number to me. You know what I mean? I keep pretty fit. I play football a couple of times a week still. And, you know, as long as I keep doing half decent, you know, I'm still going to play, as long as I keep earning money. Because I ain't going to earn money doing anything else. I ain't going to go labouring now at 43.
Yeah.
Get me 70, 80 quid a day. I need to keep playing. And listen, I'm still ranked pretty high. So most of the tournament winners nowadays are in their 40s anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever's coming, I'm in for it.
Excellent. It's been great to talk to you, and I've got to say, it was a great highlight for me last year to see you win that, because I know how much the game means to you.
Thanks, Dave.
A really great moment.
Thanks, Dave. Much appreciated.
Thanks for your company, Mark.
No problem.
Cheers. Sports Social Podcast Network. It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.